Well, look, Ross, I saw you in a documentary, and I was surprised when you're talking about Eagle Rock that you said it you started writing it as a bluesy number, but I can't hear any blues influence in the released version.
Because the Ross Hannaford part in the verse is going doodly dung doodly dung. Well, like, that's me trying to be like boogie, like John Lee Hooker.
Oh, okay.
And then the da 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 da. That's kind of like me trying to play like Mississippi blues picking, but it's more kind of ragtime. That's why I did the ragtimey version on the tribute album, because I wanted to point that out. So it's all about how you approach a song, you know.
Yeah.
So there is definitely blues influences in there, but the chorus is very pop.
Mm.
So it was me slamming everything I'd ever learned in my 23 years at that time into one song. So it's got like a kind of, you know, grinding away blues riffs and then bang into this kind of release pop chorus.
So did you know, did you think when you were writing this song, did you know it was going to become such a huge hit? Did you feel that in your bones?
Well, I didn't know it was going to be such a big hit, but I knew it had something. And when we formed Daddy Cool, we'd already played the song with the band that Daddy Cool came out of, which was a more kind of prog rock band, Sons of the Vegetal Mother.
Yes.
And that was the first band to play Eagle Rock.
Oh, okay.
So we'd already played it,
yeah.
and it got a good reaction. So then we got down to the four piece, which is a much smaller band, and we refined it, and we would play it at gigs, and people would say, "Hey, play that one again."
Mm.
So you know, we knew we were onto something there. So when we went in to record the album after we got our deal with Sparmac, we recorded that whole album in 2.5 days and nights, you know, which is pretty fast. And most of the songs were cut in like, you know, two takes or something. But Eagle Rock, we took like four takes. So we were like, we were paying a bit more attention to that one, you know, trying a bit harder.
And did you ever find out how many copies the song sold?
Oh, well, we got gold single at the time, but the album broke all records. I mean, to get a gold album at that time, you only had to sell 10,000 albums, right? Because of, you know, and we sold like 60,000, and then it went on to sell like 100,000. So, like, they had to reinvent how many you went up to, like, then you had to, like, sell, like, you know, 20,000 or something to get a gold album. And by the time Skoke came along, who I produced about 3 years later, they broke our record, and they went and sold like 250,000 of Living in the 70s. So, you know, we were on the cusp of everything changing. You know, Daddy Cool kind of helped change the game.
Yeah, well, I was going to tell you that when I was a student, I had a very enjoyable 6 years working part time at Allen's Music in the city in Collins Street, and you guys caused me a little bit of embarrassment because we had this rack. You had all these, you know, the albums, LPs, on racks up on the counter, and often a young girl would come in with her granny and they'd say, "Do you have that new album by Daddy Cool called Sex, Dope, Rock and Roll?" And the grandmother would turn white. And we go, "Well, yes, we do." So that was very naughty, Ross, back in those days.
That's the whole point. You know.
Well, the grandmothers weren't impressed, I can tell you, you know.
Well, that's good.
You know? Shake them up a bit, you reckon, eh?
We weren't trying to impress grandmothers.
Fair enough. Well, look, thank you very much. So we're going to go out with Daddy Cool live from the My Music Bowl with a fantastic performance and reaction. And then we're going to have a listen to your classic Eagle Rock. So, Ross Wilson, thank you so much for coming onto my show again. I really appreciate it. I'm a version of Purple Haze.
Yeah, we'll break a leg in Sydney.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I hope to be back on air there once I settle in and spend more time with the family and all that sort of stuff and go from there. But good luck with your digging around. You might, you know, keep recording and we'll like to hear some more of your songs.
Thanks for playing my music. I appreciate it.
It's great. All right. Thank you. Bye, Ross.
Bye-bye.
Daddy who? Daddy who? Daddy cool, daddy cool. Daddy cool, daddy cool. Daddy cool, daddy cool.
Turn around once and we'll do the eagle run.
And you're listening to Mark Kopeloff on the station that sounds great to me, 88.3 Southern FM.
Never have you on my mind. Now you're there all the time. Never knew what I missed till I kissed you.
I'm going to play some snippets from my past interviews. Now, I had the great pleasure of interviewing over 110 artists, so many nice people. Everyone was very nice, so... And some of these were recorded with primitive equipment up to 22 years ago, and some had a terrible phone line, so please put up with that on those ones. First up, well, people who know I'm a Beatle freak, so getting to interview one of the Beatles was certainly a highlight of my 22 years. I got to interview Ringo Starr. Getting to these people is extremely hard. You have to have a certain track record and deal with all sorts of people. But I did get to him. It wasn't a great situation because he was backstage at the Jay Leno show, and he went on to perform with his band at the time. And unfortunately, I didn't get a very long interview with him because he got the call to go and perform in front of millions of people, which is understandable. Anyway, I was talking with him about his then new CD, Choose Love, but of course I had to segue somehow to talk to him about the Beatles. So let's have a listen to Ringo Starr.
I just wanted to mention that in 2 days' time, you turn 65, and happy birthday for that. But I don't see any evidence of you slowing down, and this album shows that you're still firing on all cylinders and that you're still one of the top international drummers.
I don't think one of the top. I think I am the top.
Sorry about that. Yeah, well...
And where are we going? To the toppermost of the poppermost?
That's what you used to say in the Beatles. Well, John,
that was
John,
said a
John.
Long time ago. Anyway, yeah, I still love to play. You know, the fantasy and the dream is still coming true. When I was 13, I only wanted to play drums. I still want to play drums. I want to play with good people. I'm still playing with good people. And, you know, I'm blessed in that respect that I'm still doing what I love to do.
Well, I think it's sad, though, that some people don't realise what an integral part your drumming had on the sound of the Beatles. For example, just to pick one song, if people listen to Rain, your drumming is just phenomenal. It sounds like you were possessed.
Yes, but I don't know why everybody is surprised.
No, but it's just...
But Rain is a personal favourite of mine, because I feel... I don't know, that one track I sort of played differently, and I don't think I played like that before or after that track. Just something happened where I was in a different mind frame, you know, and I played like I played. It was all a bit fast for me. Ooh. Now, usually when it comes to a fill or a break, more than likely I'll half the time. And that one I sort of double the time. It was really strange.
Well, about drumming, Ringo, I'll quote you. You once said, I didn't want to be a guitarist. I didn't want to play bass. I wanted to be a drummer. It was in my soul. So how would you then describe your drumming style?
Well, the style, I don't know. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, you learn the basic patterns, which, you know, you play rock, you play swing, you play shuffle, you play a waltz, whatever. You learn those patterns, and then the art comes into the fills, to where you fill or you don't fill, where you feel it, you know, where your timing is, you know, is right. And, you know, sometimes when it comes to the chorus, you know, you can just edge it up a little bit. You don't want to speed it up, but you can edge it up because everybody loves the chorus. Yes. And don't be afraid of things like that, you know, of being a human, not a robot.
Yeah. much. You're listening to Mark Kopeloff on a station that sounds great to me, 88.3 Southern FM.
They slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my...
All right, next up is the Beatles producer, the musical genius, the late, great George Martin, Sir George Martin, and I was honoured to conduct three long interviews with him over a couple of years period. Now, I have read over 60 books on the Beatles, and I'd never heard the revelation you're about to hear, and when I put it to air, it got an incredible response, especially from the press. The Herald Sun were phoning me, Leader newspaper... I was interviewed by the ABC from Canberra. It was an amazing time, and I'd just like to say one thing I've learned across those 22 years is the higher up people are in the music industry, the nicer I've found them. They're all nice, but George Martin promised me about five different things during that time when he was on six boards in London, and he delivered on every one of those promises, and it was a big thrill for me to meet him when he came here to do a show. So let's have a listen to this short revelation from Sir George Martin.
I want to ask, which Beatles songs do you wish you could go back and re-record, and why? In other words, of course, once it's released to the public, I just wonder if there was any time when you heard it on the radio and you thought, oh, I wish I would have added this in or fixed this up or something like that.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the things that... we hear now, they're so fixed, you can't imagine them in any other way. There isn't a great deal I would like to go back over. I think I'd like to go back and have done some of the stuff that Phil Spector had overlaid. I'd like to have had a different go there. But funnily enough, when I was talking to John in his house about a year before he died, we were chatting about old times, and he said to me, he said, you know, I'd really like to record our stuff again. I said, which stuff, John? He said, all of it. I said, you can't mean that. You don't really mean everything, do you? He said, yes, I do. He said, we could do it better now. I said, what? Even Strawberry Fields? He said, especially Strawberry Fields. And it was obvious that John, in his eyes, had, or rather in his ears, he had something that was never quite achieved.
Yes.
You know, he had an ideal. I guess that his ideal world, his dream world, was much more vivid than his real world.
Yes, so that was a world revelation. Just imagine if they'd recorded all the songs again using today's technology. Would have been incredible. But I'd like to do a call out to the late Jeff Emmerich, who I had the pleasure of interviewing, and Richard Lush, my good mate up in Sydney, the two of them in the recording the Beatles. If anyone ever sees a mixing desk that's used these days by recording artists, it's huge, and you've got computers, so you can do 4,000 million tracks if you want to. The Beatles had four tracks, and Jeff Emmerich had this amazing ability to record and do stuff with it. He came up with new ideas, and it was so interesting that in Abbey Road Studios back in those days, the technicians, the guys who actually fixed equipment and all that, they walked around with white coats, and they're very strict. And Jeff said, you know, we weren't allowed to do this and do that, so we used to, it was a bit like a naughty schoolboy, he'd wait until the technicians had gone home, and then they'd start doing stuff. So if you listen... I'll just give an example. Revolution, the Beatles. If you listen to the beginning of that song, it's really distorted. And the way they did that, because they didn't have the equipment to do that back in those days, except they plugged John's guitar directly into the recording desk, and that was definitely a no-no. And the reason they called it a no-no was because they were worried that people like Jeff, sound engineers, were going to blow up the equipment. But Jeff tried it, and he tried other ideas, and you got that, you listen to Strawberry Fields on a four-track machine. It's unbelievable.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Thank you.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. No one I think is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Always know, sometimes think it's me, but you know I know, and it's a dream. I think I know, I mean, yes, but it's all wrong. That is, I think I disagree. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever.
But if you want more money for people with minds that hate. All I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right. All right. All right. Institution, well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.